Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The IMF wants countries to control their public debt.
It's more expensive for African countries to borrow. When you look at the interest rates on bonds, you see that African countries pay about 10% interest rates on the average. Current challenge with Africa's debt is the debt restructuring problem.
Human Rights Watch criticizes Burkina Faso for omitting abuses in its report to an African Commission on Human Rights. Gabon plans to vote on a new constitution that would allow the military leader to run for president. Some countries continue to struggle as the world marks Polio Day today, Thursday. Observers say the standoff in Ghana's parliament may be far from being resolved.
There are instances where you cannot have a negotiated settlement because parties are entrenched in their position. So the only way that you can arbitrate or have a negotiated settlement is when the parties are in agreement.
And rival vendors of Harris and Trump campaign merchandise share space and try to lower political temperatures. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The International Monetary Fund is calling on countries to take decisive action to control public debt. The call comes as the debt is set to exceed $100 trillion this year, with many countries, including those in Africa, at high risk of distress. Moses Habyarimana reports.
While addressing the press during the meeting of the International Monetary Fund that is taking place in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday, Vitor Gaspar, the director of fiscal affairs department at the IMF, said that decisive fiscal policy and structural policy reforms can make a substantial contribution to growth amid souring public debt.
Deficits are high and global public debt is very high, rising and risky. Global public debt is projected to go above $100 trillion this year. At the current pace, the global debt-to-GDP ratio will approach 100% by the end of the decade, rising above the pandemic peak.
In Africa, with emerging market and developing economies, the IMF indicated that countries should try to restrict large government wage bills and safeguard public investment to get debt under control. David Russeri works with the IMF Fiscal Affairs Department.
The challenge that Nigeria faces, as well as many other countries in the region, there are two. One is very low revenue to GDP ratio. And the second, one trend that we've seen, we are a bit concerned, is that the ratio of the debt service obligation to revenue has been increasing. So for the average low-income country, it's about 15%. It means that basically a large part of revenue in these countries goes to just finance the debt.
African countries are facing significant debt burdens, with over 30 countries either showing signs of debt distress already or with significant signs of heading into that direction. Yungong Theophilus Jong is the policy manager at the African Forum and Network on Debt and Development, a pan-African civil society organization based in Zimbabwe working on issues of sustainable debt in Africa.
It's more expensive for African countries to borrow. When you look at the interest rates on bonds, you see that African countries pay about 10% interest rates on the average compared to just about 0.8 and 25% for countries like Germany and the United States of America. Current challenge with Africa's debt is, you know, is the debt restructuring problem.
African countries are carrying a higher level of debt than before the COVID-19 pandemic, when it was at 61%. Commercial debt in Africa now accounts for 43% of the total debt, up from 20% in 2000. On the other hand, there is good news. According to the World Bank, the structure of African debt has changed considerably as bilateral debt now represents 27% compared to the 52% in 2000. Moses Avyarimana for Voice of America, Washington, D.C.
It appears that a standoff in Ghana's parliament between the ruling New Patriotic Party, the NPP, and the opposition National Democratic Congress, the NDC, is far from being resolved. The parliament adjourned indefinitely on Tuesday following a legal dispute over the speaker's decision to declare four parliamentary seats vacant. This came about after four members switched their party affiliations, thereby giving a slim majority to the opposition. On Wednesday, the NPP accused the NDC of playing politics to win the December 2024 presidential and parliamentary elections. Ibrahim Amalaiba is the director of conflict resolution for the opposition NDC. He tells me a negotiated settlement is remote because both parties are entrenched in their positions.
The speaker, pursuant to Article 97 of the Constitution, declared some 40 vacant because the MPs from those areas have decided to, if I should say cross carpet, decided to jettison the vehicle that brought them to Parliament and then to now go on their own to do something else as wanting to stand for MP in those constituencies as either independent or now forcing to become members of a political party. So the Constitution is very clear on that. It says that anybody who came to Parliament on the ticket of a political party but decides to contest on another political party without to vacate his seat. If you came to Parliament on the ticket of a political party and you now want to go as an independent, you also lose your seat.
So with this arrangement that you have just explained, does it give any one of the two leading parties an advantage in Parliament?
Prior to this announcement of the vacancy, the two main political parties each had 137 members of Parliament. There was one independent member of Parliament, but he came from the ruling party stock. The ruling party conducted their primaries in a way that he wasn't happy with, and so he went independent and won against the ruling party's candidate. So he then came to Parliament and decided to align with his party. So that gave the majority to the ruling party. Now with the vacancies announced, three of those members of Parliament, or if you want, two, come from the ruling party, one comes from the opposition party, and then this independent again, this time, wants to stand on the ticket of the ruling party. So if the three of them are taken off, that brings the number of the ruling party in Parliament to 135, and then that will bring the opposition party's number to 136, thereby making the opposition now the majority.
I was reading an article where the ruling Patriotic Party is accusing the NDC of playing election politics. As you know, your country will vote in December, saying that you're trying to sabotage the legislative process to gain electoral advantage.
I disagree because there's precedence on this matter. In the last parliament, when the independent candidate today, who was then a member of the MPP, decided to file to become an independent, his seat was declared vacant by the MPP. Then they had enough numbers such that they didn't care if one person was not part of them, or they didn't care if one of their seats was declared vacant. Today, the only reason why the MPP is resisting this declaration of seat vacant is because the numbers are close. So it is not about the NDC. It is about the double standard that the MPP is engaging.
What do you think needs to be done to resolve this crisis?
There are instances where you cannot have a negotiated settlement because parties are entrenched in their positions. So the only way that you can arbitrate or have a negotiated settlement is when the parties are in agreement that they want to shift from their entrenched position.
Ibrahim Amalaiba is the Director of Conflict Resolution of Ghana's main opposition National Democratic Congress, the NDC party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Accra. Human Rights Watch is calling out the government of Burkina Faso for failing to include human rights violations taking place in the country in a report to the African Commission on Human and People's Rights. Burkinabe authorities, security forces, and terror groups are all accused of widespread abuses against civilians and restrictions on people's rights and freedoms. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Human Rights Watch says it is concerned that Burkina Faso is not providing the African Commission with the right picture of its human rights situation and that the country's reporting is not up to date. The Commission requires member states to report on the human rights situation in their countries and the measures taken by the authorities to address the abuses. The last report covers 2015 to 2021 and was reviewed Wednesday. Alan Gari, Human Rights Watch Africa Advocacy Director, says Burkina Faso's reporting does not cover more recent abuses in the country.
The report falls short of a number of human rights violations that we have been documenting as Human Rights Watch between 2021 and 2024. So this information is not readily available for the Commission at this point. We have made interventions at the Commission and shared a number of our reports with the Commission to take this into consideration.
Local and international human rights groups say widespread human rights violations are taking place in the country as the military government wrestles with insecurity caused by Islamist extremist groups. The rights groups say abuses by the government and military include arbitrary arrests, extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, torture, and interference with the judiciary and media. The Islamist groups are also accused of serious abuses against civilians, including summary executions, sexual violence, abductions, and besieging towns and villages across the country. Burkina Faso's report to the Commission says the government has established a panel to investigate and prosecute terrorism acts, observe detainees' rights, and train its security forces in international human rights and humanitarian law to prevent abuse. Paul Ogedi teaches law at the University of Nairobi and is a human rights expert attached to the African Commission on Human and People's Rights. He says periodic reporting on the human rights situation in a given country can help the country improve its record and save lives.
The reporting obligation is very important to help the country adhere to the African Charter or comply with the obligations under the African Charter. When you do not report, then it is very hard for the Commission, through its mandate, to help you as a country improve on aspects where there might be weaknesses.
Ogendi explains what actions the Commission can take against a country that fails to comply.
So most of the action that is taken is for maybe the heads of states to take note of what is happening. And perhaps in some cases urge the states to be compliant with the obligations under the African Charter. But I've also seen a situation whereby the Commission can have a mission in those countries, or they can have advocacy visits to try and talk to the heads of state.
Last year, the Commission wrote to Burkina Faso following the killing of civilians in the Matenga and Yatenga province to initiate an investigation and ensure the protection of civilians. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 24th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There are mixed reactions in Gabon after military rulers this week announced that a referendum on a new constitution will be held November 16. The new charter would remove the post of prime minister, a move that the critics say gave too much power to the president. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon, the opposition is also not happy that the military leader, General Brice Oligui Nguema, will be allowed to run for president if the new constitution is approved.
State media in Gabon is telling citizens that everyone 18 years and above has a civic duty to vote in the November 16 constitutional referendum. The country's transitional military rulers say if approved, the new constitution will be a major step toward restoring civilian rule in Gabon and implementing recommendations of April's National Dialogue, a nearly month-long conference on how to achieve that objective. The proposed charter established August 30 as a day of national liberation to mark the bloodless coup in which General Brice Clotaire Oligui Nguema seized power from President Ali Bongo last year. Military leaders say the coup saved Gabon from a serious political, economic, and institutional crisis. The constitution would abolish the post of prime minister and create the post of vice president. Presidents would be directly elected by the people and limited to 2 7-year terms. The new charter would also outlaw intimate relations between people of the same sex. Some Gabonese say the referendum is being rushed. Honorable Emmanuel is a history student at the Omar Bongo University in the capital Libreville. He says Gabon's transitional government officials should have taken at least 2 months to educate people on the basic principles and laws of the nation they are proposing before convening civilians to vote in a constitutional referendum on November 16. Government officials say copies of the draft constitution have been distributed on social media platforms. However, an estimated 30% of the Central African state's civilians do not have internet access. Meanwhile, opposition parties say General Nguema has not respected his promise to restore civilian rule by making it clear in the proposed constitution that the military should not play a role in politics. Jean Delors Biongne, a member of Gabon's constitutional committee, defends the wording of the document.
Le président Oligui Nguema a le droit de se présenter en tant que Gabonais car aucun texte n'interdit.
Biongne says the proposed constitution does not bar qualified civilians and Gabon's defense staff members, including transitional president General Brice Clotaire Oligui Nguema, from running for president because it is undemocratic to restrain people who are capable from contributing to the welfare of Gabon. He says the proposed constitution is revolutionary because it sets presidential term limits and makes it possible for power to alternate. When Nguema seized power last year, he promised to restore civilian rule within 2 years. Nguema has not said if he will run for president at the end of the transitional period. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
1 in 200 polio infections lead to irreversible paralysis, and among those paralyzed, 5 to 10% of them die when breathing muscles become immobilized. This is according to the World Health Organization, the WHO, which says that since 1988, polio vaccines have led to a 99% decrease in cases and prevented an estimated 20 million cases of paralysis in children. As the world marks World Polio Day today, Thursday, at least 26 countries in Africa continue to be affected by the disease. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Polio is a highly infectious disease affecting mainly children under the age of 5. The virus attacks the nervous system and can lead to spinal and respiratory paralysis and death. According to the World Health Organization, vaccination has prevented at least 20 million cases of paralysis in children. Mandy Cohen is the director for the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia, and a member of the Global Polio Eradication Initiative Oversight Board. She says the CDC remains committed to eradicating the disease in the remaining countries experiencing outbreaks.
It is inspiring to see what we can achieve when we work together. The eradication of polio is within sight, and we must add it to the list of the greatest achievements of mankind. It won't be easy, but making history never is. We have the tools and knowledge to ensure no child is paralyzed by polio again. Together, let's deliver another historic win for humanity and end polio today.
She says World Polio Day reminds us of the important role that polio vaccines play in protecting children's lives and safeguarding public health around the world. WHO says cases have decreased by over 99% since 1988. However, the endemic transmissions of the wild polio virus is still being reported in border areas of Afghanistan and Pakistan. The coordinator for polio eradication program at the Regional Office for Africa, Jamal Ahmed, says it took time for Africa to eradicate the disease.
Eradicating wild polio was not easy. It took the efforts of millions of hardworking community health workers to reach every child and vaccinate every child. Even history is not easy, but it's only 100% worth it.
A report by the WHO indicates that due to escalating violence, UN agencies offering humanitarian aid in Gaza have been forced to postpone the third phase of vaccination campaign that is ongoing in many countries across the world. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says current conditions in Gaza continue to jeopardize people's safety and movement in northern Gaza, making it impossible for families to have their children vaccinated.
A minimum of 2 doses of vaccine are needed to interrupt poliovirus transmission. This will only be achieved if at least 90% of all eligible children are vaccinated in all communities and neighborhoods. In this round, children will also receive vitamin A to help boost their immunity. However, escalating violence in the north of Gaza has blocked humanitarian missions from reaching people with food and medical supplies.
With this year's theme being the road to zero polio in Africa, the WHO says Africa has reached significant milestones, including outstanding success of Madagascar, which has gone a full year without detecting circulating variant poliovirus type 1. The regional director for WHO Regional Office for Africa, Mashidiso Moeti, says political commitment, as in Africa, is crucial to the successful fight against the disease. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
In the U.S. presidential campaign, there is little to agree on between supporters of Kamala Harris and supporters of Donald Trump. From Southern California, Ginia Dulude brings us the story of two people selling rival campaign merchandise who are trying to lower the political temperature of their customers.
When California Democrat Sandra Roby saw a booth selling Donald Trump merchandise, she was frustrated by her party's low visibility in the community and decided to open a Kamala Harris booth.
Up until relatively recently, we did not promote our political beliefs out loud. It was something you just kept close to your heart and you lived respectfully amongst each other. But when Trump entered the stage, it all changed. It became kind of like World Federation Wrestling or a sports team, and we could no longer be invisible.
Orange County, California is a solidly Republican enclave in this overwhelmingly Democratic state. Republicans Elvie and Eddie Pantig don't like the Harris booth.
We don't want that.
You don't want them together side by side?
No.
Why not?
Well, you know, Orange County is supposed to be Republican, you know. And side by side is, you know,
and
one, maybe another corner, you know, separate.
In a separate corner, but not together.
California Republican Steve Lawrence runs the Trump merchandise booth. He says there was a bit of tension with Roby at first, but they eventually agreed to share the space.
Just because I'm Republican and she's Democrat, there's no reason that we can't coexist here in the same location. We have different feelings, different opinions about things. Certainly people wear their emotions on their sleeves, but, you know, we don't need to have hate that comes into the political views of both parties. We can coexist without having to be so meanful about it.
Democrat Susan Johnson says having the two stalls side by side is a good idea.
I think it's really smart. You know, I think if people just get down and, you know, talk to each other, that they can find a whole lot more in common.
Republican Zaid Habaibi says the stalls show Americans can get along without always agreeing.
This is the freedom that I speak out my mind and I tell what I believe in. I follow the the democracy regulations in this country. In the meantime, the other party can do as well.
Roby and Lawrence say they have become friends over the last few months and watch out for each other to make sure they're both safe. They say their sign, "We both ask, please be nice," helps lower their customers' political temperatures. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, North Tustin, California.
Mm-hmm. And that's it for this Thursday, October 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe whatever you do.